Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
John Steinbacher.
Was that like your basketball announcer guy voice? Like John Steinbacher.
From the University of Illinois. I can't do it.
Yeah. Can't do it.
That's not as smooth as North Carolina.
I've done a little bit of PA work in my day. I think the highlight was, you know, maybe about 17 or 18 years ago for Merrimack Community College in St. Louis.
Nice.
The one name I remember is Terry Laney. I got to announce Terry Laney's name.
Did you give it a little?
Oh, yeah. It had a little sauce.
All right, good.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
I still want to talk to the person who does that stuff now. Like,
oh, Tim Sinclair. We should get him. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
I know Tim a little bit.
I just envision them practicing all the different ways to say people's names in front of a mirror holding a hairbrush.
Probably something that I should do more often before this since I screw up pretty much everyone's name ever.
Nah, you're great, Steinbacher. Don't ever change.
I just want you to say them all like in a special way when you say people's names. Ella Vassar, for example.
For example, she'll be coming up here in just a little while. We'll talk to her, the former U of I soccer player who is now playing for FC Rosengard in Sweden. And she's trying to figure out a way to join the Canadian national team. She's now married to a Canadian citizen. She herself is a Canadian citizen, but there's some complicated FIFA rules and whatnot. So we'll get the latest on all of that from Ella.
It's FIFA, of course it's complicated.
Of course it's complicated, absolutely. So we've got that coming up. A little controversy from Mr. Steinbacher, an NBA player, Jahlil Okafor, who has been a big name in the NBA but really isn't playing much. John will have some details on what's going on there. Our usual status update, of course, all that on the way. But as we talk here, we're recording this on Friday. Tonight, there's a Big Ten Conference basketball game involving the Fighting Illini.
What?
Yeah, exactly. You're good at the record sound. That was pretty good.
I've experienced that a lot in my life.
Yeah, because usually, you know, those games don't start till right around New Year's, you know, maybe.
Yeah,
right?
About the 28th, 29th, I feel. Is
It was so jarring to see two games and then going back to a non-conference schedule, when I looked at the schedule.
Yeah, because they've got Northwestern tonight and then Maryland early next week, and then they're back into non-conference
games.
Sunday night
at 7.
Sunday night. Oh, Steinbacher's got tickets. Look out.
So the reason behind why this is happening is that the Big Ten Conference Championship Tournament is taking place a week earlier, which has wreaked havoc on the basketball schedule. And the reason it's a week earlier is they wanted to have it in New York City in Madison Square Garden.
New York City?
Yeah. I can't imagine why the Big Ten would want to have their conference tournament in New York City.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's all about the so-called media market and all that stuff. And, well, and Rutgers
Rutgers.
Rutgers in New Jersey, of course. But anyway, that's always a fun thing, talking about Rutgers in the New York media market. You know how they dominate.
That just seems wrong. I'm sorry. To have a Big Ten tournament on the East Coast.
Well, it's the second straight year. Weren't they in Washington last year?
Oh, well.
And it was wrong then.
Shows you how much I pay attention.
I mean, like, I think having it out there once every couple of years because Maryland and Rutgers, and, you know, I guess Penn State is pretty far west in Pennsylvania, so not really them. But
New York City, to echo Brian.
That's all I think.
That really
that
chaps
pace,
my
that,
hide.
That Pace Picante sauce.
Yeah, see,
I'm
right behind you with the follow up. So
nice.
I mean, the other interesting thing is traditionally when the Big Ten tournament championship game takes place at 3 o'clock on Sunday, and then at 5 o'clock they announce the tournament pairings and seedings and who makes it and who doesn't. And I've always kind of found that kind of annoying. So I kind of like that it's earlier. I just don't know that I like the reasons.
Was the Big Ten championship game the last one being played out of all of them?
So
the Big Ten was the holdup?
Yeah,
basically.
Basically, they have everything decided before that game even happens. They have to. They wouldn't have time to change things
after
the game.
Yeah, so they would probably have two opportunities. You know, if Michigan wins, they're going to be a 7 seed, and if they lose, they're going to be a 12 seed or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, something along those lines. But yeah, it's always been the last game on CBS right before the tournament selection show. Now it's a full week earlier, which is just going to be strange. So now all the Big Ten teams will play in the Big Ten tournaments, and they'll have almost 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
It's like we live in the upside down or something now. Right. Everything's different.
And just, you know, I did check. The women's tournament starts the same time it always does. It's in Indianapolis. Their season schedule is pretty much normal, and I think Illinois' first Big Ten game is like on the 28th or 29th of December. So it's just the men going wackadoodle. I don't know if next year the women will play there or not, but...
Yeah, and I think this might be a little taste of what the Big Ten schedule looks like next year, because isn't it next year where they're adding two more conference games to the schedule, going from like from 18 to 20? I seem to remember that, but
oh, really?
I could be mistaken. We'll have to double check.
Anyway,
that.
It'll be interesting for the Illini coming off a loss at Wake Forest. Since they're a young team, it probably would have been better for them to play a little together more before they start playing some of the, you know, especially the Maryland's. And Northwestern's been a bit of a disappointment so far this year after making the tournament last year. But who knows? Maybe they'll sneak up on people.
Yeah, it's possible. We'll see what happens. I did happen to catch Shannon Ryan, who covers the Illini for the Chicago Tribune, had her Big Ten power rankings going into the Big Ten conference season. She had Illinois at number 6.
Wow.
Out of 14, which I thought was a little high, but it was based on how they'd played so far, and really, you know, Illinois only has the one loss, but she had them ahead of teams like Northwestern and some others where you thought that maybe she shouldn't have, but hey, I'm sure Illini fans will be pleased to see that.
I mean, the Big Ten this year is outside of Michigan State, Purdue, and maybe Minnesota, it's kind of a, who knows.
It's a bunch of meh. Pretty much right now.
It is.
So that's what's going on there. Elsewhere, Eli Manning took a seat this past week, or is taking a seat this week. I'm trying to remember the time frame.
Yeah, so I think it's this weekend, and the reason it's a big deal is he has the second longest streak maybe in history of starts behind Brett Favre, who's way ahead of him. And apparently... they gave him the opportunity to start the game and, like, play one series or maybe even, like, one thing and then bench him, and he didn't want to do that.
Well,
I don't blame him for not wanting to do that. That would be ridiculous. That'd be like Brett Favre's letting Strahan win the sack record or whatever. You
know. Yeah, just taking a dive or whatever he did then.
I still do not get this at all.
No, and we talked a little bit about this, you know, off air before we started recording. I think it would have been one thing if the Giants had drafted a quarterback, you know, a rookie, and they wanted to get him some experience.
A Trubisky.
Exactly. But they're not. They're playing Geno Smith, who at last check was losing the job for the New York Jets. He's been in the league a few years. There's really no thought that he's the Giants' quarterback of the future. And what...
yeah.
If they're really trying to win games, do they think that Geno Smith gives them a better chance than Eli Manning?
Maybe they're just, I don't know. Eli Manning's not hasn't been good, let's be fair.
No, he hasn't, but do they think that Geno Smith is going to be better? The Giants have a lot of issues. And
sounds like it.
Yeah. And
just want to shake things up.
Yeah. And I don't think Eli Manning is the biggest issue that they have.
Yeah. Well, and as we mentioned off air, you could make a very, very good argument that there's a certain quarterback out there who's unemployed who probably has a better upside than Geno Smith.
Yeah, I think his name might start with a K, maybe. Is that the one we're thinking of?
Yeah.
Mr. Kaepernick is still looking for a job. Meanwhile, the University of Tennessee, as we talk here today, how many coaches have you tried to hire at this point? 5, 6?
A lot. For their football program.
Mm-hmm.
Their AD, I think, just resigned and
under pressure. Yeah.
Air quotes.
Yeah. Really, really biffed this one.
Yeah, and he'd only been on the job for like 8 or 9 months or something too. He was a new athletic director, came from Kansas State where he had, you know, by all accounts done a pretty good job, but I think is a Tennessee grad.
Did he hire Bruce Weber?
I think he did.
Okay, sorry. That's
I think he did. But he'd only been on the job 8 or 9 months, Tennessee alum, and then this whole thing happens, and he's out of a job. And I guess there's some chatter going on Twitter here today that former Tennessee football coach Philip Fulmer, who I think has still quite a few backers in Knoxville, has apparently been kind of hijacking some things behind the scenes, maybe hoping that he can slide into that athletic director's spot at Tennessee. So...
So, I mean, we should say that they tried to hire, what's the guy's name, Tom Greg Schiano,
yeah.
Who is the assistant, who is the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, mm-hmm. but he's got quite a history. He led the Rutgers program out of mediocrity to less mediocrity is about the best way you can say it. Not
from badness to mediocrity,
yeah.
I think would be a fair way to say it.
And doesn't really have a very, you know, he's not really, I don't think he's considered to be a up-and-comer and doesn't have a great, you know, track record. And he's associated with the Penn State controversy. I should say it's not like anything. He's never been charged with anything, but there's some documentation that he knew about what was going on and didn't say anything. So then, of course, they got torn apart for that hire, and that's really what set things going down the road. But it's interesting. The funny part was they had... Purdue has a new coach.
Jeff Brohm.
And he was supposedly going to do that. And then Sumlin from...
Who just got fired from Texas A&M.
The guy who got fired from Texas A&M, so that this was going to be a done deal, and he was going to go to Purdue since he's a Purdue alumni. But now Jeff Brohm is getting an extension at Purdue, and now they're talking about Sumlin going to Tennessee. It's just a coaching carousel.
Yes.
Speaking of coaching, mm-hmm. let's talk about Lovey for a second.
Okay, we can do
let's
that.
Let's talk about Lovey for a second. So. Yeah. Season's over.
Yep.
It was, by all accounts, dismal.
It was not good.
A lot of bright spots.
I don't think anyone expected it to be very good. Really,
maybe not this bad.
I was going to say, yeah, did they expect it to be?
I think basically they decided toward the beginning of this season that they were going to play as many of their young players as possible and get them experience. This essentially functioned like Lovey's first full season because he came in so late last year. He didn't have a recruiting class. He came in after signing day.
Right.
So the true freshmen this year was really his first recruiting class, and basically it was, all right, let's see what we've got with these guys. We're going to throw them out there. And he played 22 true freshmen.
I heard that. Yeah, I think I saw something where they started like 100 and something 22 games for freshmen this year, and the next closest team was like 40.
Yeah,
in all of
college football.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you kind of get what you get when that happens, right?
Exactly. And so I think once they started down that road, it was pretty clear that they were not going to win a lot of games. Now, they did have some games that they certainly could have won in the Big Ten Conference season. At Minnesota, they were in that game. They were in the game against Purdue. They were
Indiana.
Rutgers is probably a game that they should have been more competitive in, and they weren't.
They were actually fairly competitive with Wisconsin until the second half, which is kind of crazy now.
Yeah, it is. So there were a few bright spots individually, but then you also had some injuries to, again, Mikey Dudek, the wide receiver who just can't catch a break. He's been hurt just about since he came to campus after his freshman year.
He can't catch anything because he's hurt all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's nice there, Lisa. I like that.
That's how I feel.
The question is, when is love? I mean, I think right now you see maybe a couple national media reports occasionally like, oh, Lovey's fed up and the fans are fed up. And I don't think anyone's at that point yet. But the question is maybe next year if things don't start looking better. The thing that I hear Lovey and everyone say, and the recruiting classes probably haven't been quite as high as people would have hoped, considering the NFL caliber of the entire staff. But you keep hearing people, we're recruiting to our system. Mm-hmm. We're finding we don't care about their star level. Underwood says this a lot too. We recruit to the system. We don't recruit, you know, based on stars. Of course, that's easy for teams that aren't Alabama to say. But we'll have to see whether the process, if you will work out.
The one thing they have to do here in the next year is they need to find a quarterback. They did not find one this year. Cam Thomas could be the guy. He was a true freshman playing, showed some flashes. Very good athlete, a very good runner. His passing has a lot to be desired. So we'll see how that develops.
You don't need that in a quarterback.
We'll see how that develops in the offseason. It did kind of remind me a little bit of a true freshman, Juice Williams, when he was playing under Ron Zook. I think there were some similarities there. I did see Robert Rosenthal, who runs the Alliance blog, post some comparative stats. Cam Thomas's stats were pretty close to Kurt Kittner's stats as a true freshman. I don't know that Cam Thomas is going to be that caliber of passer. You don't know. But when you're playing as a true freshman in the Big Ten, there are a lot of growing pains.
They do have two pretty decent freshman incoming quarterbacks as well, or not freshmen, but will be freshmen next year. Quarterbacks. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're Lovie Smith, what are you doing right now? Like recruiting, season's over, you're off, and you're just you're recruiting, and you're.
And
like, but are you just like, you're done with the season, right? You're just like not even thinking about it anymore. You're thinking ahead.
The other thing is that when you have that many guys who are true freshmen playing, their bodies are not as developed. They're not as strong as the guys they're going up against who are 2, 3, 4 years sure. older than they are. Sure. Those guys need to get in the weight room, get more strength, and continue to develop that way.
Yep.
Those are the main things, recruiting and developing the guys that you have, those true freshmen to play. That's what they're doing, so.
All right.
Well, we'll see where we're at next year. Stay tuned.
Note it. 1 year from today.
Yeah.
Indeed. So
hopefully
that's...
we'll be getting ready for the Micron PC Fight Hunger Craft Bowl.
That'd be fun.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever bowl.
I think any bowl would be a success next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's a bit of a roundup of what's been going on the last couple of weeks. Coming up next, we'll talk with former U of I soccer star Ella Masser, now playing in Sweden. We'll see what she's up to and talk about her quest to join the Canadian national team. That's coming up next here on The Bandwagon. Champaign Urbana residents will probably know the name Ella Masser from her time not only as a soccer star at Urbana High School, but at the University of Illinois. And since graduating from the U of I, she's played for the U.S. national team, several professional teams, now playing overseas in Sweden. And Ella joins me on the phone right now for the Bandwagon podcast. Ella, how are you?
I'm good. I actually thought it would be a lot colder in Chicago.
Yeah, welcome to... Welcome to, I guess, the new winter here, huh?
Yeah, I got off the plane with two coats on, thinking I was going to freeze to death, and then I started to sweat through right away, so I'm happy that the sun's shining.
Very good. Well, it's great to talk to you again. I talked to you several times over the years, but I think it's been a little while. I guess before we really get into why we're talking to you today, but just update us a little bit on where you're playing now and how your career's going.
Yeah, well, I just finished 2 years in Sweden. I was actually in the south of it, kind of by Copenhagen, if you guys can look at Sweden in general. And going over there, I didn't kind of know what to expect. I knew it was Champions League, and after playing in Paris in 2012, I never really thought that I'd get another opportunity to play Champions League. So for me in my career, it was kind of a why not situation. And then, to be honest, I don't know if it's because I was surrounded by such world-class players. I'm talking about, Marta, Lika Martins, who's just voted best player in the world, German players, Anja Mittag, who has won literally every medal that you can imagine. I did well, and now it seems like I'll be, I can't say where exactly, but I can say if you look at the men's game, you have Barcelona and Real Madrid are the two big powerhouses, and for women, it's Lyon and Wolfsburg, and I'm proud to say I'll be heading to one of those two teams in the next month or so.
That's awesome.
Whoa.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, and recently we read an article, about some of your hopes here for the next couple of years, Ella, and maybe for some who don't know, in the last couple of years you've married Aaron McLeod, outstanding goalkeeper for the Canadian national team, and it sounds like you're trying to make it happen that you would be eligible to play on the Canadian women's national team as well. What can you tell us about where you're at in that process?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple conversations with John Herdman, their coach, and, with women's football, you can never really know what's going to happen after your contract's over. But all I can say really is that, with signing with this team, I go till 2019, which is exact timing for the World Cup. We've been talking to FIFA a little bit as well, and the thing about FIFA is, I don't know, some lines are a little blurry, and this is a very blurry line, because usually you have players like... Lauren Sussman, who's from Wisconsin, her father or grandfather was Canadian, so she got to switch her nationality. And for me, this is, I think, one of the first cases ever where it is a marriage. FIFA's biggest, red flag is that they're scared that if they do it for me in this way, that they could say, oh, this guy married this woman, and now he can play for Germany. Mm-hmm. So that is their... I guess, what they're saying at the holdup. But as of now, we're in talking with FIFA, and if they say yes, then I'm sure John, or through my conversations with John Herdman, that he'll allow me to come in to camp and see how it goes.
Hi, Ella. This is Lisa. So I have a question. You know, you just mentioned where you were going, and actually I learned that you were leaving Rosengard from my daughter, who has been a big fan of yours for a long time. So she was actually
awesome.
The one who told me. But she said one of the things that had given her pause when I told her that we were interviewing you was that you had liked a tweet. So funny that this is how we talk now. You liked it. We saw that you liked a tweet from Laura Harvey, who is going to be working with the new the Utah women's team, and
yes.
Where she had said that she was excited to get started, and that gave my daughter pause. I think for a second she's like, because she said Ella hasn't announced her next move yet, but this kind of gave me pause. Like, I think she was hoping that maybe you were going to come back and play in the United States, especially because the women's game I think is gaining some more traction here, just as soccer in general is slowly starting to gain some traction. Is that something you would ever consider, is coming back and playing in this country? I mean, obviously, you're going to the best places in the world and you need to be there. But, you know, a lot of European male players come back now to MLS to play. That's kind of sort of the joke, even though they're still really vital players. They're maybe older than a lot of the other players in MLS. So
yeah.
Would you consider coming back?
I don't know. It's a hard thing because, you know, the MLS guys that come back, they come back because they're getting millions.
True.
Unfortunately, the NWSL is not the same for women. So for me, the reason I am continuing in Europe is because, you know, if you don't play for your country, the biggest thing to win is Champions League. And, you know, if you look at the last 2 years, the team I'm going to has won Champions League. So for me, that's to win something and to put my name kind of in the records. I don't think any American Canadian has played up. Or has won something with this team. You know, of course, you can say Alex Morgan played with Lyon, but not like a full season. So that's exciting. But NWSL, I mean, I think it is growing. You know, as of now, Aaron is looking for a team, and a big thing is the NWSL. So I don't know if I will be the McLeod that's in Utah or NWSL, but I hope one of us, there's a good chance that one of us will be there and playing, depending on what happens. But no doors are closed, for sure.
Cool. Okay, well, I have another question for you, just about, like, where you're at now in terms of your career and just how you've had, like, sort of multiple trajectories, it seems like. You know, this article that I'm reading in 442 says, you know, you were all but retired 2 years ago when you left the Dash, and then you have this resurgence when you get to Europe. And my daughter says, and I quote, that you are kind of a big deal in the women's soccer world right now. Do you think that you're peaking right now, or did you think that you peaked 2 years ago? And are you surprised at where you are? How does that work for a female athlete? Is there better longevity because, I mean, obviously there's tons of injuries. I mean, you've had them, your wife's had them, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think it's probably individual for most. But for me, you know, when Rosengard called, you know, they wanted Aaron. You know, I kind of touched upon that. But, you know, I only made it because Aaron made me go over and try out. So I was ready to go over and just retire. And maybe Aaron and I step in the next process of our life with kids and whatnot. So that was kind of out of my maybe fate had calling. And on the other hand, you know, national team, maybe it's been my saving grace that I haven't, because in Europe, you really get the taste of every time we have a FIFA window where they go with the national team, you know, when Canada plays or U.S., they're putting maybe 3 or 4 games if they go to an All-Garb or a World Cup, you know, in a short amount of time, where, you know, I was just training at home. So at 31 now, you know, my test scores have gotten better, and maybe it's, you can say maybe it's because we train year-round now, and I don't have as many quote-unquote miles on my body. You know, I have a lot less games than most at my age, and maybe that's my saving grace at this point.
Can you tell me what kind of support girls have for playing soccer in Europe, like just kids? You know, I know a little bit about how you got started playing soccer here in Urbana. You played in the Park District, and then you were in Little Illini, which is now IFC, and then, you know, Urbana High School, et cetera. What kinds of programs or support is there for young women overseas from what you've seen?
Yeah, it's definitely not as open, I would say. There's not like a local park district. It's kind of a more structured environment of if you're one of the top girls and you get to go play. And in Rosengard, we were quite lucky because actually there is quite a bit of work with the refugees that are coming in, the big insurgent of the Syrians. And so these are just people that are, you know, football for them is just getting out and having something to do. But they definitely don't have the same structure of, oh, you play this team, you practice at this time. But again, if you're a good kid, if you're 10, 11, 12, you know, and they start seeing you, then the bigger clubs, Rosengard, I think, has one of the best youth academies in Sweden. So if you can make their youth, then, you know, it's like anything. It's just a lot more serious. You know, it's like playing for a big Chicago Eclipse or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't think it's as structured as the States.
Gotcha.
Are you, changing topic a little bit, just a little bit more local, are you able to keep up at all with the Illini soccer program? I know they're coming off of a bit of a down year, but I just wondered if you've been too busy over there or if you've been able to keep up a little bit over the years?
No, I definitely keep up. You know, we have a group of girls that I lived with, eight of us that were really close. So two of them still coach. And one actually, Jess Cantorina, she does the Big Ten Network commentating. So we get her updates. We know that they've had a bit of a rough year. And I also know that I'm sure that the coaching styles have changed. But we're all big fans of Janet. And, of course, you know, Aaron and I still argue about who's better, Penn State or Illinois. She always says, well, you never beat us at anything. I go, well, touche, but definitely still a Illini fan over here for sure.
Well, you know, that's not quite true, though. I seem to remember a game in particular where a certain Illinois forward had a few goals in the second half of a big comeback win over Penn State a few years back.
Oh,
so.
I remember that, but Aaron's like, that was the year I was gone. So I make grandma jokes after that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, so as you kind of you know, look ahead a little bit, how long do you think you want to keep playing at this level?
I mean, I have it until 2019, and so we'll see. I mean, I want to say that I'm done after my stint overseas just because of, you know, having a family. And, you know, to be honest, that's something that you probably don't talk about much in the men's game because, you know, the wives stay home. But for me, it's Aaron's goal is ultimately to play the World Cup and Olympics. And for me, it would, of course, be a great honor. But, of course, I'm also thinking about I'll be 33 at the end of this contract, and I am definitely the one in my family that has no kids, and everybody else is popping out babies left and right. I think I have 8 or 9 nieces and nephews. So for me, I can't say 100%, but I would assume that after these year and a half that we will start to try to have a family. But again, 33 in Sweden is young to have kids. 33 in the States is probably a bit old. So we'll see what happens. Depends how you look at it.
Sure. And where are you and Aaron based now? Where are you living?
Vancouver.
Okay. All right. Very good.
So we're kind of doing a week in Chicago, a week in Toronto with her family, and then we get to go home for 3 weeks, and then back to Europe we go.
Outstanding. Well, Ella Mazur, it's really great to catch up with you here on the Bandwagon Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck on your next stop and with your efforts to play for the Canadian national team.
I appreciate it, guys, really. Thank
we'll
you so
much. We'll be watching. Thank you.
Congrats.
Okay.
Thanks again to Ella Mazur for catching us up on what's happening with her playing career overseas. Now it is time for our newest segment here on the Bandwagon, a little controversy, and John Steinbacher has it for us this week. What do you have?
Yeah, it's not like a huge, crazy, you know, sometimes a little lighter controversy is okay, but I think this is an interesting story just because it's Jahlil Okafor who was drafted by the Philadelphia 76ers as part of their process of rebuilding and
the process, franchise,
which actually seems to be working out pretty good this year. They've got a winning record and they've got two really outstanding players, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, which leads to why Jaleel is not maybe playing as much as he would like because those two both are center forward kind of guys, just like him. Anyway, he was he came out of Chicago about 3 or 4 years ago, I want to say.
Yeah, I think that's
right. Number one recruit in the country, went to Duke. I remember that was back when people thought John Gross could still potentially land someone, and the Illini were recruiting him, and his response to, like, oh, what do you think about the Illini? And he said, well, John Gross knows how to pronounce my name. And that was...
That's something.
That was something. Anyway, he went to Duke, of course, had a great season there, was an All-American, won the national championship, was potentially thought of as a potential number one pick. I think he went at number three, ended up on the 76ers, had a pretty decent rookie year. Then last year, I think, dealt with a lot of injuries. I think somewhere in the middle of the second half of last year, they just sort of held him out. And then this year, he's not played at all. I mean, maybe a couple minutes, not, if that. And he's publicly come out and asked to be traded. It's clear that the 76ers want to trade him, but he's sort of stuck in no man's land there. He's definitely good enough to be an NBA player. He's probably, you know, the 76ers are probably right not to play him, considering the two or three people they have in front of him, thanks to years and years of tanking. Mm-hmm. But he's sort of stuck out here in no man's land. And there's, so throughout the NBA, I think there's a picture of, like, some of the Kevin Durant and Steph Curry posting with someone that's like, free Ja is what they're saying. And he's publicly come out and asked to be traded. The controversy is the 76ers, he's asked to be released. Controversy is the 76ers still think they can trade for him. No one wants to trade for him because he's apparently going to be a free agent after this year. 76, so he's sitting there not playing where he could be playing, probably, you know, for a team like the Bulls or someone who would be desperate for someone who could potentially score 14, 15 points inside. So, I mean, it's an interesting story to go from number one recruit in the country, but, you know, top college basketball player to 3 or 4 years later, you can't even play on your own team.
Well, it reminds me, vaguely, completely different, like, series of teams and what's at stake. But when we've talked in the past about D-League basketball and guys maybe getting a call up and everything, and it's like, granted, those guys are dealing with it's the same ball game, but a whole different type of ball game, let's say. But even for a guy like what does it do for a guy like him or a player like him, to know that you're good and can play in the NBA and you can't get it done. Like, no one wants you to play, or they're not willing to let him go right now, or whatever. Just kind of sitting there. That has to mess with your head a little bit, I think.
I would think so.
Yeah, I would think so too. Especially for someone, and that is actually the same thing in the D League, where you've grown up and been the best player, and in college you're the best player on your team, and suddenly. But I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I don't know. I remember thinking, when Okafor came out, how it also goes to show how hyped these recruits are, and then you get to the NBA, and same thing with Ball and for the Lakers, right? It's like, it's a whole different game.
Oh, yeah. Completely different game. So we'll see if anyone does.
I think he'll end up playing somewhere. The question is whether he gets to play this year, or he has to wait till next year.
I just think it sucks because, like, they're hyped all the way through high school, through college, and then to start this pro career, and they're not really given the tools of humility or understanding what it's like to not. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not part of the training.
Yeah.
You know, they're the big man everywhere else they go, and then they get to a pro team, and it's like, you're going to ride the bench.
Yeah, so, that's going to be a little bit of a shock.
And then people do weird and dumb and bad things. I'm not saying he has or will, but it's just because they don't know how to cope. So I hope he's getting some, extra coaching in that regard.
Yeah, and he has an interesting life history. I kind of read about it. His dad is from Africa and played, I think, college ball, not in the NBA, and his mom died when he was young. So not he's dealt with adversity for sure, but anyway, interesting story.
All right, we'll see if
Jaleel
gets to play. Yeah, we appreciate that, John. And it is time now for our status update. What has caught our eye on social media? Mind if I start?
You can start.
I think one of the most fun players on social media, just to see the stuff that gets spread around about him, is Cubs infielder Javier Baez. He is celebrating a birthday today. He's 25 years old.
Jeez.
And in Javi's honor, the Cubs are counting down the top nine Javier Baez GIFs. I don't think there's many consensus on how you say that yet. But anyway, my favorite of the nine so far is number six, which is dedicated to everyone who has ever been on the wrong side of a Javi tag. He's known for his quick tags of players, and this is one showing him tagging a Reds player right in the head as he tries to steal second base. You're out. Sit down. But I always enjoy a good Javi GIF.
I think I know who the number one is going to be.
Yeah? What do you think number one is?
And we should say, this is before it's been announced, it's got to be the one where he slides into home to win the game. Was it the game-winning?
Yes.
And just pops right up. That's the smoothest thing. That's what I love about Javi Baez, is he makes everything look so easy. But yeah, there's a GIF where he slides into home, hits a game-winning run, and just pops right up and puts his arms out. That's
yes.
Also...
It's like dancing.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you should...
Well, I can picture it, though.
I think this is also further evidence. You know, the Cubs are in off-season. There's all these rumors about who they're going to trade. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're trading Baez just because of this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, it's gold.
I mean, he's definitely, there's no doubt that he's not one of the top 10 players in Major League Baseball, but his jersey is in the top 10, right?
Right. And he's got
charisma.
It's intangibles.
Right? He's photogenic. He's got charisma.
He has fun.
Yes. And he's one of those players that just pops out at you when you're watching him on the diamond. You know, he's going to do something in just about every game that stands out. So anyway, that's my status update for this week.
So mine is less about the subject matter of the tweet than it is about the way the hashtag is used.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my, and you guys might hate this guy, but I have fond memories of Kenny Mayne from when he was on ESPN back in the mid-90s.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought he was so funny back in the olden times. And I love the way also now that he uses Twitter and he uses the hashtag after the thing that he's hashtagging. So here it says sports hashtag. And obviously he's doing it on purpose, but I just think it's so funny. Anyway, so if you follow Kenny Mayne on Twitter, you will be treated to that. But the tweet that I pointed out I posted it internally to our Slack account was about Trump and Tiger Woods linked by deal involving China. And John writes in our notes, do we have to start talking about Tiger Woods again? I couldn't figure out if it was because of that.
No.
If it was because of something else that was going on.
He's like, he had a round of golf yesterday where he was under par at a tournament. Is he back again?
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so that's a twofold social media status update thing for me is, number one, I like the way that Kenny Mayne uses hashtags, which is like a completely ineffective, unsearchable way.
Yes.
And also the tweet that I happened to use was this thing about Trump and Tiger Woods. And I guess Tiger Woods designed a golf course for Trump, and that could have helped Trump violate the emoluments clause. I did not watch the 9 minute and 20 second long piece about it, though. So.
Well.
We'll post it for you guys so you can watch it.
Yeah, right.
Outstanding.
You guys do the journalism.
Yeah.
All right, John, what do you got?
The other night I was hanging out with my friend and someone just said, hey, have you seen this video of LeBron? And I thought, oh, it's going to be something amazing. And they showed it to me and it's him like taking three steps, then stopping, planting his feet, then taking like two more steps. And it's just LeBron James. It's like the most blatant travel ever. And then it led me down this rabbit hole, of course. And I think people who are familiar with the NBA probably know this, but LeBron James travels all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really fun to watch because, I mean, I don't care. It's LeBron James. He can travel all he wants. Of course he doesn't get called.
No.
And
that
I found,
was my question.
And I found one.
Oh, my God.
I found one, and I think it's from last year, where it's like a fast break. Someone outlets the ball to him. He's before half court, takes like, seven steps, takes it. There's even one part where he thinks about dribbling and just doesn't. Takes about seven steps and dunks it. And I mean, there's really no point in calling traveling there because there's no one in his way, so it's whatever. But it's just funny to watch. I enjoy it.
Yes. There's been jokes about the NBA and traveling since I was a little kid.
Well, yeah, and Michael Jordan used to get away with a lot. I mean, his last shot with the Bulls is a bit blatant push off of. But But I don't think anybody has ever gotten away. And, you know, they don't call traveling that much, but it's just funny to watch. It's
but
fun
I'm,
to watch.
I'm some little kid who plays on a YMCA team, and I'm watching this like, oh, you can do that? Yeah. LeBron does it.
Yeah, LeBron doesn't have to dribble. Why do
That's
I have
what
to
I would
dribble?
Say, yeah.
That's a, he gets, and he didn't get called, so I'm going to try this.
And then every time the refs are like, son, you're not LeBron.
So that will, I think, just about wrap things up, which means it is time for credits.
It's time for credits, and credits are where we say thank you for joining us on the bandwagon. This episode was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Braltz, and John Steinbacher. We'd like to thank our special guest today, who was Ella Masser. Thanks, Ella. Extra thanks go to Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, musical genius Automatic Empire. They wrote and performed our theme music and maybe any other music that Brian has decided to throw in there. Find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where we link to everything we discuss on this here podcast. You can also subscribe to the bandwagon and rate it in iTunes. If you don't have iTunes, that's cool. You can find us pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast, all consonants, no vowels, to get our tweets. We love questions, links, recommendations, so feel free to call our attention to whatever. We will be back in a couple of weeks, yes? And this episode's a little off. We had some probs.
Maybe we'll we'll do like a year end.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it.
Yeah, we got to look at schedules. So we'll be back soon for another episode about the often strange and always compelling intersection between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.